American Cassette Ministries welcomes you to a thrilling personal testimony of a former Nazi youth leader, entitled, From the Swastika to the Cross. And now, here is Petra Sukow.
Versammlung at Blue Mountain Academy, Pennsylvania, am 12. Juni 1981. Who understood me? Oh, good. I'm so thankful to be here. And it took me all day to drive from Virginia, but I had a beautiful time praying and singing. And when I came here to the campground and going through Pennsylvania, it reminded me of 22 years ago, just before I left for the mission field, on how I had the privilege of sharing my experience at Vescoesville. And then at the end, everybody saying, God be with you till we meet again, and I cried. Well, let me share a little bit of the Lord's leading in my life. And I tell you, my experience and my relationship with Him is sweeter and more wonderful every day. And I'm discovering things every day that only makes me so excited to be in God's work. Friends, the winning adventure. Let me tell my part of the winning adventure. It was a very, very difficult and cold winter in 1944-45. The coldest winter we had ever experienced in many a year. And standing at a hotel, warmed and well-fed, stood a teenager, looking down at the cold winter afternoon where a group of people walked by with no shoes, but their feet clad with rags. Their hair was shaven, only a thin blanket keeping out the biting cold. And when they came by the hotel, they were driven in a group, driven on by soldiers. And when they came by the hotel, they broke out of line and went over the garbage can to find anything edible there, just to be driven together again like a herd of animals and driven on. Where to? This teenager stood at the window, having no compassion, no feeling for the suffering of any humanity, because those people that walked there were our arch enemies, the Jews. And we had been taught to hate them. I was born and raised in Berlin, the capital city of Germany, and started school when Hitler started his 1,000-year reign, which lasted 12 years. I was born the third child in the family. We were four. My father belonged to the party. My mother was a Christian, but father did not believe. And when we came to school, religion was still part of our curriculum, but in a very short time that was changed. And more, the Hitler Youth took over, and the teaching of the government in school, in the home, and of course the Hitler Youth. Dear friend, when I see what's going on in schools today, when I see what is going on as far as regulations are concerned, I shudder, for we are going down the same road like pre-war Germany did. Don't ever forget it. A storm is coming, relentless in its fury. Are we ready? We joined the Hitler Youth. It was compulsory at age 10. But it was a wonderful time. We sang, we had all kinds of crafts. It was very similar to your Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts what do you call them here, Pathfinders and so on. It just was wonderful and we enjoyed it. The war started at a very early age. And of course, when I tell you that Hitler started when I started school, that already dates me. But it's all right, dear friend, for I tell you, every day with the Lord, I don't mind to get older because our walk is getting sweeter every day. As the war started and went on further and further, propaganda was raised, and we were taught that we were the super race, the Germans. A German girl did not smoke. A German girl did not drink. A German girl did not wear makeup or jewelry, wasn't found in bad company. Ever heard these kind of standards? When I read a little book called Messages to Young People, I could not understand why a book like this had to be written. Was not this the standard of every young person? And the super race had to do a lot of things. Sport was one of it. The survival of the fittest. And so we sang, and I still can sing. I have still a loud voice, so I practically don't need a mic, but I think maybe some of you can hear better. All right, as the war went on, and first were the hero stories told, and we were prepared to enter into war services. As the enemy started bombing Germany, they would take the schools out and place them into camps to be razed so that they would not be destroyed. And in one of those camps, I became a leader. I was 15 years old, and the children I took care of were the ages between 10 and 14. And I never forget when a letter came from those children, your house is bombed out, your mother got killed, or your father is missing in action. I still remember these empty words that I gave for comfort to those children. Don't cry. Your parents have paid the supreme sacrifice. Oh, what empty words. We were not allowed to cry. Tears were weakness, and anything was weakness was not liked in that super race. The war went on and went harder and harder. Our rations were smaller and smaller. Have you ever been hungry? I mean really hungry. I was. And I see the end of the war, which found me on the Russian front. just before the end, the propaganda was just wild, going to ask any boy or girl age 14, 15, 16 to go on the front to help win the war. And we were fanatic when I was front, right in front line. And right with the stormtroopers at the headquarters. And I never forget the night when one of the officers came to the home where I was staying with another girl and told us, the war is over. We have lost. I thought the sky would fall in. I couldn't believe it. It cannot be possible. While we were not religious, we had kind of a nominal idea about God. But if there is a God, why? We were so good people. I had never heard of a concentration camp at that time, up to that time. I also was told by the officer that I had to join the refugees that had come in for weeks. By a numberless amount, day and night and day and night, sometimes the track would stop to bury one, to dig an icy grave for someone frozen to death or starved. And now I was asked to join them, and I never forget the words of this officer, "Don't let the Russians get a hold of you." And so I started running with the rest of them, a rucksack on my back, 10, 15, 20 miles a day, nothing to eat but just the grass, dandelions, stinging nettles, all these kind of plants. I can teach a class in wilderness survival, if you please. You learn fast when you have to. The Russians were coming in very fast, and we had heard from people that had barely escaped that they would first come into the villages and find alcohol, and when they have found it and were drunk, they were looking for girls, age 8 to age 88. Do I have to explain what happened? I never forget how they, when, of course, they were faster than we could run, and they would put out loudspeaker from the villages and made announcements that we should not run. They would give the German girls 6 pounds of bread to eat per week. That's not very much if you have nothing else with it. You had to do only one thing, 1 hour a day to be at their service. Hunger hurts. I never forget it. And I remember many girls compromising, say not every Russian can be that bad. But I also can tell you I will never forget the screams of those that were trapped. For the soldiers had no idea of culture. I remember my aunt being misused, and the Russian told her, "We will not go till Stalin give us sun from ceiling and water from wall, electricity and running water." They would get with their boots and their uniforms into bed. They did not know any better. What they wanted is just to have the flesh. We know that if the siren would go 5 minutes, it meant that the enemy was 3 miles away, and I never forget hearing it. And just unpacking all my stuff in the woods as fast as I could so that my burden was lighter and I could run faster. And I never forget the day when I saw the Russian tank not further away than the entrance, the doors are, or even closer. And I still see the Russian coming at close to me with a grin at his face I never forget. And I turned my heel and ran as fast as I could. He didn't follow. Why? I did pretty good in running, did I? Or was somebody else holding his hand over me? Again, it was days and days with nothing to eat and only to run. And finally, when I came over the border, I left the refugees and went alone into the woods and walking. The woods had to be my bed and the grass my food. I had just what I had on my body, nothing to wear, and just a few things left in my rucksack. And you know, not only hunger hurts, but what would happen with you if you walk and walk and walk and walk 20 miles a day? What do you get on your feet? Blisters, yes. I counted 1, 2, 3, up till 10, and then I gave up counting. And so one day, I never forget, I found an old-fashioned baby buggy in the woods. You know, a big one with big wheels, and the handle was turned a few times. But it had four wheels, and what would you as a teenager, 16 years, do if the hill was going down? Just to save a few steps. And here I would push my buggy or pull it and sing and sing till about 1 o'clock my stomach would make a louder noise than my voice could make. And so I never forget the day, of course. Have you ever had to beg for food or any of your children? I was fainting before I started to beg for food, but I got to that. I tell you, pride is a terrible thing. But anyway, I knocked at the door and never forget. We hadn't seen any food for a long time. And if a farmer would have put in potatoes that year, hungry refugees had dug them out before the morning. There was no seed time. There would not be any harvest. The forest was broken down from the war and from the bombing. When I looked at Germany, Germany was such a beautiful country. Why? If there is a God, why all this destruction? Had we not been such good people? I never forget when I knocked at one door and I was invited in and asked that I could stay for dinner. Oh, friend, there is no sweeter word than the invitation for a meal, is it not? And before long, while I was asked where I was from, where I was going, the house smelled with the scent of boiled potatoes in the jacket. Oh, that's all. But friends, not a sweeter scent in all my life. When at least once a year, if not more often, I just eat one boiled potato with a few grains of salt. In remembrance. Because after eating dandelions, which is a very good, very nutritional green, by the way, when I eat this often and share this with my cooking school classes, people don't know how good the stuff is. With a nice dressing on it, tastes good. But with nothing on it, it stands here pretty soon. Stinging nettles is a delightful green. Again, made with a nice little sauce and onions and so on. Very delicious. But just to boil it in water so the stingers wouldn't sting you and then eat it, it does not taste good after a while. My fingernails would come up, just separate from the bed. My teeth would be loose. And my body was full with boils. Ever heard of anybody like that before? Dysentery and all kinds of things, and now you keep walking with all these stuff. Well, anyway, here I was invited and we had the first potato after starvation with a few grains of salt. why had this farmer still potatoes and still more potatoes to share? Before we sat down, we held hands and the Father said the blessing. Could this be the reason? It did not really occur to me or sink in at this time, neither did the story of Alice. Alice was 12 years old when the Russians came in, and the mother was sick and said to her, "Alice, please go and hide. I cannot see them take you away." And Alice said, "Mother, have you not told me that the angels of the Lord encamp round about them that fear him and deliver them?" And she begged her mother that she could keep staying and praying. And she prayed on her knees till rough voices entered the door, somebody kicking it open. One officer and four soldiers. And one step forward and grasped Alice at her wrist and jerked her up from her knees, ready to drag her out. And she was so horrified, and as she was at the door, she screamed at that officer, "Don't hast du denn keine Mutter? Don't you have a mother?" That soldier stopped in his track and stared at her with his glassy eyes, put his hand in the pocket, and pulled out a wallet with some German money, and said in broken German, "Here, take care of your mother. I see to it this no one will molest you again," and gave orders and stepped out. Why? If there is a God, could this be it? I walked 536 miles from Czechoslovakia to the Black Forest. This time I found some friends in the Black Forest. The Black Forest was occupied by the French. The French came in and brought us freedom. Wasn't that nice of them? They had first burned the town that I came in. And then they came in with their families and they saw a piano in their home, if anyone stood. They freed you of it. If you had a radio or a watch or a camera, you yourself had to take it to the town hall to be freed of it. Your children had any toys or any valuables in the home, they freed you of it. Wasn't that nice of them? So I stayed there, and one day we had new flowers come up, snowdrops, the first flowers in the spring, just peeked their head through the snow. And here came a French boy and picked some flowers for his teacher. Wasn't it nice of him in our garden? But I had heard somewhere of the commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," and out I went and said to him, "Here is the gate, out." His teacher was in uniform standing at the gate, and his mother came in. She spoke fluently French, and I spoke fluently German, and you can imagine how we understood each other. Pretty soon there came an interpreter, and she said, "The Germans have been stealing much more than a few flowers." I said, "I'm sorry. An honest Frenchman takes today just as much from the German as an honest German took from the French, when I only knew honest people." That was too much. Pretty soon there came a jeep, and they said, "Are you Petra Zukau?" "Yes, come in." All right, and then they told me all kinds of curse words that I had supposed to have used. But dear friends, I was raised very strictly, and we were never allowed to use bad language. And that saved my neck that time. Though I was angry, I could say, "This is not in my repertoire." And I denied having said any of those words that they said I did. But pretty soon they came to one brick building that was still standing. A wall was rounded. They rang a bell and somebody with a big bunch of key came and unlocked the door and locked it again, unlocked another and locked it again. Somebody examined me whether I had weapons. Weapons? Where was I? Any guess? In jail. Me in jail? What for? I never seen a jail from the outside, much less from the inside. Did you know a criminal is standing before you telling the story? Criminal number 326. What for? Because of provoking attitude against the French government. You know that you can get to prison for an attitude? That was it. 2 months prison. If I ever was a Nazi, I was it now. And I was ready to tell him so because I had to get before the court. And I did not care what would happen to me. I probably would not be here to tell you the story, except for one person that was allowed to come into prison. A preacher. Well, you know, I had never been to church before, except for when I was fleeing and was begging, and the people say, oh, you should go to church, you know. It's your only hope. And I would go to church, and a young preacher would accuse everybody that had something to do with the Hitlers, with the Nazis, condemn us. Was this Christianity? I didn't need that. And out I went again. And here came a preacher in, but he was different. He didn't condemn me. He didn't accuse me. He only said, Petra, don't stand up for that which is past. He said, have you ever thought to giving God a chance? He is looking for young people. And then he mentioned all those qualities, all those standards that we were raised up with, that have backbone, that are loyal, that have stick-to-itiveness and whatever. He said, think about it. Well, I forgot his prayer, and I never read the literature he left with me, but he got me through this. I soft-pedaled my talk. I still give it, but soft-pedaled it quite a bit before the tribunal. When I heard the story of the minister, I could understand his attitude. When the Moroccans had come into town and burned it, they had burned everything, and he had lived in the parish next to the church. He was out making calls, and when he came home, the beams had fallen just before his wife and one or two daughters had tried to get out, when he found them burned to death. There were no funeral trains. He had himself to take it to the on a wheelbarrow to the cemetery and bury them there. Friends, I never forget this man. How compassionate, how kind. He, to me, was the first person that brought me the character of Christ, for he had met him in his suffering. So after 2 months, I went out. And I was encouraged to take children's nursing. I love children. I still do. And so I went in the hospital to take nursing training. But why do children get sick? They haven't done anything wrong. If there is a God, why do children die? I couldn't understand. Then we were encouraged after finishing nursing to go for a little while to a foreign country. You see, we had now a democracy. We were not dictators anymore. Well, what does that mean? That mean when we didn't want to wear the stockings that the director of nursing told us to put on, We said we're a democracy, we can put on bobby socks. That's what we thought democracy was. And a few little things like that. But anyway, we went to a foreign country and I signed up to go to England. 1 year to England. But you see, we had been the super race. But after the war, the propaganda brought up the scum. All the stuff that had gone on behind our backs, so to speak. I could not believe it. I'd never heard of a concentration camp and couldn't believe it now, even though we had to see the documentary film in order to get our food stamps. We would sit in a movie like this. I could not believe. We had been the super race, but after the war, the propaganda brought up the scum. All the stuff that had gone on behind our backs, so to speak. I could not believe it. I'd never heard of a concentration camp and couldn't believe it now, even though we had to see the documentary film in order to get our food stamps. We would sit in a movie like this. I could not believe. So I went to England, not so much to be a children's nurse, that was just my excuse, but to show the English what a good German was like. So I went to England, I said, how do you do? Couldn't speak the language. Boy, the headache I wouldn't want on anybody. The people that I had signed up to, I didn't know. The first husband of the lady was killed by the German. The second husband was shot blind by the German, and now I saw him going like this. He had two darling daughters he never saw. I saw for the first time the fence on the other side. And furthermore, the guilt just kind of broke me down, for I had something to do with this, for I had believed that we were right. And so after 1 year, I went back to Germany, and at that time they had the Nuremberg trials, and I couldn't believe what was going on here and what was going on there, and I was sick. I went back to England for a second year, and this time I went to London, and they were very nice people. I didn't feel the barriers that I felt with the first people, the British people. And I went one day to Coventry Cathedral. Not only the German churches had been bombed out, but we had bombed the British churches as well. And here Coventry Cathedral was all there. Out of the broken rocks, there had been made an altar, and out of the half-burned beams, a cross. And in the partially standing vault were engraved these words, Father, forgive them. I will never forget it. For all at once, my tears were unbottled. I never cried in my life before, but I now cried, for that meant me, for I had a part in it. While I was living in London, I made friends, and it seemed as everybody talked about religion, and they want me to go to this church and to this church and to this church. And I went to every church once. But I didn't like it. It was so dusty, and it was so unreal and so traditional. There was a group of young people. They said, there is an American evangelist coming. Oh, you should hear him. He is just wonderful. Oh, forget those Americans. I had a hard time with the British as it was. I couldn't stand the Americans at that time. But, oh, he's so wonderful, he must come. There is the opening of the new gallery center. Well, have you ever twisted somebody on their arm to come to evangelistic meeting? When my arm got twisted, I said, well, I can go once. I looked around, pink and blue, typical American, I didn't like it. Looked at the people, their shoes were not polished. Look, mine. There were some buttons missing. Mine's all in place. You see, all the things that we were taught were our strengths. I saw all the weaknesses. This is how the devil does it. But one thing I could not criticize, and that was the man that stood in front of us. His shoes were polished. His buttons were in place. He was immaculately groomed. Plus, he opened this word and for the first time made this book practical, come alive. Somebody had sent me a Bible years ago, but you know, Hitler Youth, it would be sissy to have a Bible and I would hide it. Except, you know, curiosity, you know. I would read the words written by somebody, you child of man, this book keeps you from sin, or sin keeps you from this book. Well, hide it for a while. But then when this man talked, I never forget how he said, do you want to become a different man, a different woman? 10 minutes in your Bible every day will make you such. Do you believe that, friends? All right, I said way, way back in the auditorium, I said, all right, God, I give you 2 months to prove that. He told the story of Paderewski, how he said, if I don't practice my piano one day a week, I notice the difference. 2 days, my family, and if I dare not practice for a whole week, the whole public will notice the difference. And then he came back to this word. But he said, never, never open the book except you ask the Lord to guide you and ask the Holy Spirit to be your teacher. I said, okay, I'll try it. 10 minutes? No, I'll give you a better chance, God. Just in case. When I went home, I didn't know how to pray. I just got up 5:30 in the morning and said, if this is true, help me find it. Was this a prayer? God knows. And so I read, and of course there were plenty of material to read, and so I read and I looked it up. I had looked at the Bible before just to find argument and controversy. And you know, you can't find it. And every time I came into the new gallery, you know, the people would say, how do you do? How do you do? This kind of thing. And then I would come with a question. You know, I had looked up some kind of an argument. Those people wouldn't argue. That made me so mad. They just said, do you pray? Do you read the Bible? But in the meantime, I had to listen. Since then, I was Bible worker for George Vanderman and then knew how he works. But anyway, I had to come back and had to come back. Something made me come back. When there was a film shown, I beheld his glory of the life, crucifixion and resurrection of Christ. There was one scene of doubting Thomas. And I never forget how Thomas said, I will not believe unless I put my hand into hands on my finger in his side. And then Christ came and called him and said, be not doubting but believing. Because thou hast seen, thou believe. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. Pretty soon I know which time this section was, and time again, I just lived 5 minutes from the place. Every time I went to see that one scene, pretty soon it wasn't Thomas that was there, but Petra. Be not doubting, but believing. Blessed are they that have not seen, but yet believed. Time went on, and I kept reading the word, and pretty soon I couldn't find these arguments anymore, the opposition. It just wasn't there anymore. If there was anything God wanted, could find in me, Why me? For my whole family. I always wanted to be honest. I think that's the only thing that I ever can say. And God knew it. One day, George Vandeman would talk at the center and talked on evolution. I didn't know what the word evolution meant. And he talked about, you know, world development, and he said, only because of the teaching of Nietzsche and Karl Marx could an Adolf Hitler exist. Never forget these words. But did I hear Adolf Hitler? Politics in church? I was through with him. But I had to tell him so. And so after the meeting, I went forward and bawled him out. I let him have it. I cried at the same time because my English wasn't fluent enough to really, you know, give the words I wanted to use. And he would say, just relax. How could you relax? Just sit down. Let's have a word of prayer. This prayer business again. And he said a very simple prayer, so simple it didn't really sink in at the time. But he asked the Lord to please help me understand the word on how world history is fulfilled in this book. And I steamed out from there and went to the lady that I lived with. She spoke also broken English. And I told her I was through with religion because the people were talking on politics. She said very sweetly, you know, I have nothing against the Germans. But this, I have something against their past government. Nobody can blame me. This night she told me that she was a Czech Jew. Her whole family was gassed by the Germans. I see the teenagers standing at the wall, at the window, seeing the people pass by, having no compassion for humanity. Was it their family? I couldn't believe it that I worked for a Jew. I looked at her nose and you could see it 3 miles against the wind that she was a Jew. I had never seen it. But she had been so kind, so I couldn't take off and leave. I couldn't sleep, dear friends, for 2 weeks. I had asthma so badly, I had to sit up in bed. Then I looked for a doctor with a German name. What was he, a Jew? Everywhere I turned, I ran into the Jews. About 3 days later, after this experience with George Vandeman, I don't know where I was. Every time before, when people talked about the Nazis and Hitler, my defenses would get up like bristles. But after this experience, I never forget, and I don't know where I was, but I heard them talk so harshly, so angrily against the Germans. And I remember standing there and say, well, actually, you can't blame them the way they feel. Look what we have done. And immediately I say, Petra, what's the matter? Are you getting disloyal to your country? And then I had asked so many times, so many ministers, what is prayer? And God, a theological answer. But somehow it came through. Could it be that God is answering the first prayer in my behalf? I went back again to the meetings, and of course it grew on me. And the time came where I had to make a decision. I was living in a street where there were a lot of antique stores, and I found a little golden swastika on a chain. And next door there was a jewelry store, and there was a little cross on a chain. And I never forget, sometimes I tell the story about the three crosses. Which cross should I buy? The swastika and wear it secretly and stick to the old, or buy the Christian cross and wear it and look for something new? I never forget standing at a bus station one day and look up. You know how those jets make those streamers? And from two jets crossing, there was a streamers left of a perfect cross for just a minute or so. And it's just marvelous. I could keep you here till midnight, but I promise you I won't, because of all those little details that are just, to me, they're just miracles and beautiful signs of God, of God's love for me. Well, finally, Elder E.L. Minchin had a youth congress in London and made an appeal. Should I or should I not? And though the seat was so sticky, I got up and made my decision for Christ. And then I was going to be baptized, but 2 weeks before, or so, no, it wasn't 2 weeks before, well, I was so nervous. Should I or should I not? There were 260 denominations that claimed to have it. How come those people with those unpolished shoes and those missing buttons and the untidy hair and their fingernails and those kids were like brats? Should I join them? But you know, I couldn't help. I kept reading and I kept studying. Sabbath was never a problem. If the Bible was true, then the Sabbath was true. And I either have to do it completely or not at all. I don't know any middle way, neither do I know it today. So, just before the baptism, you know when stores or when offices close on Friday in our Adventist communities, 12 o'clock or 2 o'clock. But I remember a letter came on Friday evening at 5 o'clock. Telling about the meetings on the baptism. And so, and it was one sentence. Friend, if you have any question, please let me know. Well, I had tried to call Elder Vanderman a long, long time. Either the secretary told me that he was not in or was in a meeting, or the switchboard operator cut me off. You know, he was never available, and I said, all right, God, I don't know what to do. I just don't feel right. But I'm going to give it one more try. Remember, it was 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening on Friday afternoon in the office. And I sat at my chair and rang Regent 888. Never forget that. The switchboard operator had gone home. The secretary had gone home. On the other side was George Vanderman. And I told him, you know, I just don't feel right to be baptized tomorrow. When he said, he asked me about some of the Bible message, of course there was no question. You know, the 10 minutes in the Bible, that was right. But those people, I just didn't feel right. I tried not to be too critical by that time, you know. But I just don't feel right. And he told me the story of Paul, how he thought he was doing God a service by persecuting the Christian till he came to the road of Damascus. And then he said, God, what would thou have me to do? And George Vanderman said, Petra, let me ask you a question. Are you going after feeling or truth? Friends, I never forget it. Have you ever been at the ocean where the waves came in and just kind of almost swept you away? And then it's a calm. This was my experience. And I knew and never doubted one day since, this is it. When I was baptized the next day and the Bible worker put her arm around, I was so surprised I nearly fell backwards into the baptistry. And then they came up, all those people, to congratulate you. And I looked at their shoes were polished, all their buttons were in place. All the people changed that day. Friends, therefore, if anyone be in Christ, he is a new creature. All things are passed away, behold, all things are become new. friends I could keep you here and tell you the miracles that happened. I've been canvassing, I have to tell you that, you know, because I want to be a missionary nurse. Completely or not at all, you know. And that was, I heard you could go canvassing, and so I couldn't speak English very well. I went in gathering and had the highest amount. When I told Elder Vanderman this, he didn't want me to go in gathering because of my language. And then he said, well, how much did you make? I said, well, 112 pounds. He said, boy, that's over $300. You go canvassing. So he thought to it that I got a section canvassing. The secretary gave me his section. And I went with little bedtime stories up the stairs, down the stairs, up to 10 hours a day. And you know the territory that I got? Nobody knew. But doors flew on my face right and left, because the whole territory was German Jewish refugees. The greatest evidence that the miracle happened in my life was when they let me come in and told me their terrible stories. My heart went out in compassion. And I just longed to tell them what God can do for them, for he had done it for me. And friend, while I was working here in the Brook Hope Health Center, we had many Jews come up to our program. The first word is, when they see me, they see the Holocaust. And the only question, I deal with them the first day, I say, what do you think of the Germans? I get it. They say, have you ever done anything against the Jews? And I'm so thankful that the Lord never permitted me to do anything against them. When I told them I never heard of a concentration camp, and then it's all right. So after 5 weeks canvassing, I had the money to go to America. So I went to school. I got there after freshman week was over. No test, nothing. A Sunday was registration. She looked bright and signed me up for 16 hours of classwork. I hadn't had any school for 19 years or so on, or 13 years or something. Never had a day of high school, but they didn't know that. After 1 year, of course, I didn't know anything either, how their system goes here. I had a wonderful time at Madison College, and I went all through the East here telling my story, and that took me to Blue Mountain Academy and also to West Coastville. And so, after 1 year, when I took nursing, went into nursing, said, where's your high school diploma? I said, I don't have any. Well, where did you go to high school? I said, I never ever did. So then they found out I never had a high school, but yet I had 1 year college, so they let me take the DED test, and I passed. On friends, again, I would not dare to take any test without prayer. And after 4 years working my way through school, I was the only girl in a class of 42 of who is who in American colleges and universities. I don't take any credit, for I was never a light in school. I have to tell you about the first weekend when I was at Madison. A faculty member invited me to home to lunch, and I said, oh, great, boy, a faculty member, that was something. And so I thought, well, I had to watch my etiquette. You know, I just came from London, from England. And I watched how they were doing things, and I was so, so uncomfortable and tried not to say anything, and kind of patted myself on the shoulder. I didn't do a single thing wrong. And so after 1 hour, I thought, for the first visit, this is enough. And so I found an excuse that I had to go home. And so in good German, I would shake my hostess' hand when she took me to the door, shook it real hard, you know, she's a German student. And say, oh, Mrs. Stern, thank you so much for your hostility. Well, I never heard the end of that. After finishing nursing training, I went to take midwifery and then went to Burma and had 3.5 years there in Burma. And this is another story. This is another part of the book of Acts of Petra Zukau. And after Mission Field, our hospital was closed, when I was invited to become the Jeep nurse in the South, and for 3 years I would go to the Mission Field of Kentucky, Tennessee. And I tell you, I have never seen anything worse in Burma that I didn't find in this United States. When I found that it wasn't the Jews here that had a stigma on them, you have to say more. Friends, the devil has its counterpart everywhere. After this, I went to Loma Linda to took my master in public health, and then had the privilege of starting the first health reconditioning center in the United States, before Vima or Yakima or Nathan Pritikin. For 5 years, I directed that in Utah, and then took my doctorate in Loma Linda. And you know, I still have a few holes in my education. No science before, and then to take my doctorate in health science. I tell you, I was sweating there quite a bit. But dear friends, now I'm so thankful with all this experience the Lord has given me. He has brought me back again into Bible work and health work combined. For I believe those two go together. We cannot worship God unless we have a healthy body and a healthy mind. And if we don't, and we really, if we only go after health and not after spiritual things, we are not in harmony either. We are not totally healthy. And so I have the privilege now as a Bible worker and health counselor to go out into the community and invite people to learn better health habits, better lifestyles, and to follow their Lord. Friends, I mentioned to you a storm is coming, relentless in its fury. Where are we? Are we here for just another camp meeting to sit and enjoy meeting and listening to people? What are we doing about in our personal relationship with Christ? I could tell you many things of the experience that I'm just brand new that I'm experiencing about a loving, loving Heavenly Father. We have winning adventures. Is our life individually a winning adventure? Friends, it can be. And if it is not, I'm sure there are many people here on the campground that if you have a personal need that are willing to help you with it, whatever it is, do not go away from this. For friends, the events on our horizon here are going fast, fast, fast. It's fulfillment. We cannot afford to leave this camp meeting the way we came. What do you say? And so I only pray. I'm grateful for this opportunity to share with you my experience. And I said, it's nothing. Forget everything, the way I look, the way I talk. But I pray, I hope and pray that you have seen a glimpse of what God can do when a person is totally consecrated. And I'm afraid I'm still human too and have feet of clay. But Lord, friends, my way is upward and onward. What is yours? May God bless you richly as you continue this week in spiritual emphasis. And friends, again, if we sing, God be with you till we meet again, if not here, may the Lord grant us that we meet all on the sea of glass in the very near future, is my prayer.
You've been listening to the thrilling personal testimony of Petra Sukow, titled From the Swastika to the Cross, catalog number PF101, international copyright 1986, American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. This cassette is protected by international copyright and thus protected by federal law against all copying, duplication, and transcriptions. Please understand it is unlawful to copy this cassette for any purpose.
For additional copies of this personal testimony, as well as other thrilling personal testimonies by Jan Doward entitled He Followed Me Into War, J.H. Harris's Miracle of Deliverance, Jan Hamill's From American Ballet Theater to Christ, Gary Dunlap's Fishing for Jesus, and Ron Haverson's From Gangs to God, as well as Angel Visitor, 20 Minutes to Eternity, and Your Doubts Are God's Word. All available from American Cassette Ministries. Please write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box, 922 Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The postal zip code is 17108 in the United States of America. Waiting to serve you, this is American Cassette Ministries. We're a nonprofit corporation helping prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ.